Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
Well, here's what we learned Tuesday night at Allen Fieldhouse. When the Kansas Jayhawks are good, they are not good. They're great. They're unstoppable. They're a force to be reckoned with. And what a performance for the ages on Tuesday night as Kansas beats Kansas State 102-83. It is just another game in the season for Kansas. It's a game that when at the beginning of the year you see the schedule come out, you write it down as a win. You don't even think about this one. There was nothing key about it. There was nothing important about this game. There was nothing that said or screamed, hey, they just won the Big 12. They pretty much had that wrapped up coming in. There was nothing other than you're playing an in-state supposed rival on a Tuesday night in front of a packed house as the culmination, the end of the season is near. The Big 12 title is within reach. The NCAA tournament is around the corner in March, and you're suddenly playing your best basketball. You are playing without the person, the player you thought might be the key to your success getting to the Final Four or becoming a national champion, and that is Remy Martin running the offense. They have, with Yesufu, they have solved that problem. Looks like he is a tremendous young star. The speed that he brings to the court is unlike anything maybe we've ever seen with a Bill Self basketball team. And on this particular night, and on any night with any basketball team, when you shoot like Kansas did, you're just going to look like a Ferrari, and they did. 102 points for the Jayhawks, 15 out of 24 from three, 26 out of 40 in two-point baskets, which is really the bread and butter of the Bill Self era of Kansas basketball. They're shooting over 56% from the field this year on two-pointers. No, that's not last night. That's the season. And that's the second best in the Bill Self era. So for all the whining and complaining by fans about David McCormick and, well, Mitch Lightfoot's just a guy and all this other stuff, the Jayhawks are shooting a ridiculous 56% from two. Much of this is Christian Brown driving to the basket, laying it in. He just gets a ton of layups. They've got some guys that can hit some mid-range jumpers. They certainly did that on this night. It was an interesting strategy by Bruce Weber. I don't fault him for trying what he tried to do. He essentially said, we're going to go play this game. We're going to allow Kansas to get some open looks from three, and we're going to hope that they miss them. And the way he did it was completely different than what the Jayhawks were prepared for, which is sort of the essence of coaching. Did anybody going into the game think that Kansas State could slow the game down, play defense inside, keep Kansas from making dunks and layups and two-point baskets, and win the game 65-63. Did anybody think that was possible coming in? I didn't. K-State has no inside game. They have no real presence there. And I think you wanted to try to challenge and take the game outside. They start with a four-guard offense, and the four guards for Kansas State are really good. They are. They're four really good players. In fact, the four guards that Kansas State started last night combined for 57 points. What more could you want? I mean, you're supposed to win college basketball games. When you start a small offense, one of the guards, Mark Smith, the transfer from Missouri, is the top rebounder on the team. So he functions a little bit like Christian Brown, that he shoots, he drives, he scores, and he rebounds. He does a lot of different things. But I'd consider him a guard, even in college basketball. It's pretty much a four-guard offense or four-guard team that you're starting. They notched 57 points in this game, and K-State wasn't competitive. Bruce Weber said, let's do it. Let's play our small lineup. Let's go up and down the floor, and let's just see what happens. I think what Bruce Weber knew was, we're going to score if we do this. And they did. They scored 83 points. I think Bruce Weber felt like, we're going to score 75 points. If we play this way, we're going to score between 75 and 85 points. And maybe this is the night where we can get to the free throw line a couple more times. Maybe Kansas clanks some threes, and it winds up being an 80s kind of game. I have a hard time remembering the last time somebody tried to run with Kansas and beat them. I mean, Gonzaga in the non-con maybe. And all I was thinking watching this game was, how spectacular would a KU-Gonzaga national title game be with both teams going up and down the floor as Ferraris offensively? I think Gonzaga's probably the best offensive team in the country. Kansas can't be far behind because we know now, and we've seen this over the last few weeks, they clearly have plenty of guys that can make threes. Anybody can go cold. maybe in the NCAA tournament, an Elite Eight game, Kansas goes out and goes 3-for-19 from three, and we all scratch our heads and go, what the hell happened? Their season just ended. That can happen to anyone. It absolutely can. But this is a team that was 15 out of 24 from three, for crying out loud. I don't care if you're in a shoot-around with no defense on the floor before the game. I'm not sure many teams can just stand out there practicing. Have you ever gone to a game early and watched them shoot threes before the game? Do it sometime, and I dare you to count 24 shots in a row and find me a team that made 15 of them. I mean, this was phenomenal shooting by Kansas. They were locked in. They felt great. They were at home. They love the sight lines. They love their gym. They had a lot going for them. Mostly, they absolutely 100% looked like a national title contender. Kansas State is not awful. They're not awful. This is not some, you know, terrible team with a poor coach that doesn't know what he's doing. Bruce Weber knows what he's doing. He takes a lot of criticism from K-State fans. They have a giant, massive deficiency. They have no inside game. They have nothing. That's on Bruce Weber. He didn't recruit the players. He hasn't developed them down low. There's no interior defense, and there's no scoring down low. But it's not a team that can't beat some people. They win games. They've got really good guard play, and they can shoot lights out. Kansas fans saw that the first half at Bramlage when K-State had the big commanding lead in that game. So this is not some completely rummy foe. I still didn't expect it to be a great game. I expected Kansas to cover the 11-point line. They did that with ease, winning by 19. But again, Kansas State's not terrible. This is not a typical bad Kansas State team where you just go, wow, that team does nothing. They're not that. In fact, they've been capable of changing the way they're playing, and they are changing in season, and it's led to some winning. I think they're going to win their last two home games, and they'll have a game at Texas Tech that they will not win because Tech's defense is just phenomenal. I think Tech is the kryptonite for KU. I think that's the, if we had a Big 12 title game in Kansas City, the best possible matchup for me to watch and say, I don't know who's going to win this game, would be KU and Tech. I just think the matchup for Kansas is a little more complicated because the way Texas Tech plays defense. I don't know that Kansas is going to win Saturday night at Baylor. They may do a big exhale this week. This happens. They may just go, okay, we're playing great. Everything is clicking. We're good here. We've got this league. Kansas can afford to lose the game to Baylor and still win the Big 12. They've got a two lost lead, basically, over everyone else. So they're sitting in control of this thing, and they can afford to lose the game and win this league. That's just where it is. So, look, they want to go win it. I'm not saying they're going to go down there and just fold and give a game to Baylor or whatever, and Baylor's going to lose another one anyway. They're just really, really, really good. Baji led the way with 23, but my goodness, everybody scored in double digits for Kansas. David McCormick and Mitch Lightfoot were just fine inside, two-point baskets everywhere. Kansas had 79 possessions in this game. That's almost two possessions per minute. So Kansas State decided, we're going to go four guards, and we're going to play them as fast as they've played. And I don't fault Bruce Weber for this. Might as well try it. The other way wasn't going to work. You're not going to line up and beat them down low and win a slow game. You're just not going to win that way. So the strength of your team is your four smaller players. They can all score. They're all athletic. They can all handle the ball. Take them, go, see what happens. It might be the night KU misses shots. It was not the night KU misses shots. And much of that is on K-State's defense. When you're playing that small and you're going up and down the floor, you're not going to defend very well. You were basically saying, if you can block, if you can get to the basket on a fast break and make Kansas kick it out for a quick shot from three, that was basically the game plan. Let them get into transition. K-State never tried to offensive rebound at all. Get back, let them run. Try to defend the breakaway basket at the basket. And if Braun has the ball and he's going to make him kick it out to somebody to shoot a three, and maybe it's the night they miss some threes. It was not, because they were wide open. That's what you're giving up. Kansas is that team where you can take one thing away, but you can't take it all away. They do too many things well, and Bill Self's too good at adapting. I mean, he saw this very early on, what was going on, and he just changed. Look, this isn't what they prepared for. It wasn't what they were ready for. What was the score of the game? Was K-State up like 17-16 or something at one point? or 20-19, and Self goes, okay, we're going to play this way. Here's what we're going to do. Boom, it's on, and it's a beatdown from that point. They're that good. They are that talented. Their players are that much more skilled than everyone else's. And again, this is not a Kansas State team that lacks some skill players. They're just small skill players, but they're really good basketball players. Marquise Noel and Nigel Pack will both be back next year. Those are really, really good guards. They're undersized. They're not Kansas guards. They're 3 or 4 inches smaller, but they're quick. They can move. They can shoot. They can dribble. They can do a lot of things. It's a good win for Kansas. They were inspired. They played exceedingly well. And for the most part, even for a Kansas State fan, while you felt out of it most of the late first half and second half, it was interesting enough to watch. There was enough scoring. It was a game that was played in 2 hours. You know, Kansas State just slogged through a game against Oklahoma State over the weekend. It did go to overtime, but when it went to overtime, it was still 2 hours and 25 minutes long. It was a foul fest. You know, Kansas just played West Virginia. Same kind of crap. The game took forever. West Virginia just hammers you. They beat you up. They put you at the line. The game slows down. This one had flow. It was interesting. I've got no criticisms whatsoever of Bruce Weber in this game, other than the fact that he has not recruited any interior play. Your analysis or criticism of Bruce Weber here is that he has not recruited big men. He just has not given Kansas State a chance to go up against the better teams with big players that can defend the rim and maybe even score or shoot a free throw. They just don't have that. They don't have that, and Kansas can put athletic, fast, talented guards on the floor like you can, except their guys are taller to do the same thing. That's essentially what happened in this game. Kansas is a juggernaut. Absolutely spectacular performance. Okay, Phil Mickelson, the pro golfer, is making some headlines, and a lot of people have emailed me or asked, when are you going to start talking about Phil and what's going on with Phil? When this first came out, I didn't think it was a story that was going to gain any traction, and I should have known better. This is on me. I mean, I've got to know better than this. I've got to remember and understand how sports media in this country are every bit as liberal as CNN, MSNBC, The New York Times, Washington Post, whoever you want to name. It's the same deal. Now, it took them a while to catch up because most reporters covering golf lean conservative. The sport of golf is conservative. Golfers are conservative. Tiger Woods is conservative. Tiger Woods has never wanted to be the social justice warrior or step out front of all these other things. Tiger Woods is conservative through and through. Phil Mickelson is conservative. Bryson DeChambeau is conservative. The top golfers in the world, and in fact across the tour, are largely conservative. The tour itself is very conservative. So understand that a lot of the reporters covering the sport are around this, and they see the good life, and they're like, these guys aren't dumb. And even if they come out of college and they're covering golf, they start to learn that, hey, these people living the conservative life are onto something. They seem to know what they're doing. They're relatively happy. This is a good life. They're smart. I agree with a lot of things they say. And some of the reporters even evolve over time and become conservative after they were brainwashed in college. That happens. So Phil makes some comments that I'll just tell you right now, I agreed with. I agree with pretty much everything he said. Phil Mickelson is a truth teller. Some people say he's a bomb thrower. Whatever you want to say, we live in a country now today where you can't speak the truth, clearly, without suffering consequences and having repercussions. Phil Mickelson on Tuesday said, quote, it was reckless, I offended people, and I'm deeply sorry for my choice of words, unquote. He lost a sponsorship from KPMG, who he's had for 13 years. He called every other sponsor he has and says, if you want to pause me right now or dump me, that's fine. I get it. Go for it. Phil Mickelson has more money than God. Okay, so this is not a money thing. Phil doesn't care about his sponsors. He will probably get all new sponsors that believe in what he's saying. Hell, he may wear a Let's Go Brandon cap. I don't know what he's going to do next, but he may. That's not my trouble. That's not my concern, and it isn't Phil's concern. He doesn't care about his sponsors. He doesn't care about his money. Phil Mickelson is a bigger thinker than that. Phil Mickelson's one of the greatest golfers of all time, and he is a leader of people. And a lot of people on tour let him lead, even when they're saying, well, that's Phil being Phil, or Phil speaking for Phil. I don't speak for Phil. You know, all these golfers have been asked about what Phil said, And they're like, oh, that's Phil. I don't know. They don't want to say it. But then they privately text him and say, way to go, man. Keep going. Keep doing it. That's what they do. They let Phil be the lightning rod. Great. So Phil's the lightning rod. You ask, what in the world did he say? Well, Phil Mickelson was asked about after the last tournament he played was in February, earlier in February, in Saudi Arabia. And in Saudi Arabia, Greg Norman, another famous Hall of Fame golfer, who is a ridiculously cutthroat businessman. Look, this is a lot like LeBron and China. This story is very similar to LeBron and China, or the Olympic athlete, Gu, and what she made at the Olympics in China. This is the same thing. Greg Norman, working with Saudi princes, is trying to set up a Saudi golf league for the top players in the world. They're talking about just like the top 20 players, top 20, top 30 players, saying, we're going to pay you insane amounts of money to come play in these events, win, lose, or draw. You're going to get rich. We see the value in this. We will put it on television. We will make millions of dollars. This is a private entity. We're going to do this, and you're going to make scads of money off this. Got the attention of a lot of the best players. They're like, okay, we think we're worth it. Why would Phil Mickelson think he's worthy of more money? He's an extremely wealthy man. Well, Phil Mickelson was the number 41 golfer in the world last year on the PGA Tour. He made $2.7 million. Not a bad living, right? $2.7 million is nothing. Phil Mickelson probably made $60 million last year, but he had to do it all on his own. Corporate outings, sponsorships, television commercials. He won the social, or claims he won the social media prize. The PGA Tour has a player engagement program, basically where they challenge the players. Whoever goes out and gets the most Twitter followers, Twitter hits, most social media engagement, we're going to give this bonus pool money to. And Phil won that bonus pool money. So there's lots more money out there for Phil. And nobody feels bad for these golfers, don't get me wrong. But the actual part where you show up and you grind and you play in pro-ams with sponsors on Wednesday, you play a four-day tournament, you walk and you play and you work 5 days in a row, okay? It is a grind. Laugh it off if you want. Being a pro golfer is a grind. The Wednesday pro-ams are killer. They're absolutely killer. The douchey people that get into those pro-ams and play with these guys drive them absolutely insane. No other athletes in the world have to do this. Patrick Mahomes doesn't have to go to practice and do football practice once a week with four yahoos that pay a bunch of money to Clark Hunt's foundation. He doesn't have to do that. He doesn't have to have lunch with them. He doesn't have to do any of that stuff. Right? Whit Merrifield isn't out there doing that. Phil Mickelson has to do it. It's a grind. There's real work. They've all just gone along with it, and it's been this way forever. The Saudis come along and say, we're changing all that. This is not the business model. The business model is TV, social media, big stars. We'll sell this thing. We'll make a lot of money. We're going to guarantee you money that is outrageous money. Greg Norman is spearheading the thing. And Phil Mickelson says, you know what? I may do this. I may go play in Saudi Arabia. I may leave the PGA Tour for a while and go play there and take the money. Here's what Phil Mickelson said to a guy named Shipnuck, who's a biographer, who's writing a biography about Phil Mickelson. Mickelson now says these were taken out of context or off the record and should not have been released. But again, I'm not sure what he's apologizing for here, because I believe all of this. Mickelson said of the breakaway rival league and the Saudi people putting it on, quote, they are scary MFers to get involved with. We know they killed Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi, and they have a horrible record on human rights. They execute people over there for being gay. Knowing all of this, why would I even consider it? Well, because this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to reshape how the PGA Tour operates. Okay, I get it. He's saying, we've got an opportunity. I'm here as the leader of the PGA Tour, and everyone that plays after me, Phil's money days are behind him. He's talking about all the young players coming up. Phil doesn't like the way the PGA Tour operates. Most of the players don't like the way the PGA Tour operates. They call themselves a nonprofit. It's a joke. How many grifters are making millions off the PGA Tour calling it a nonprofit? What does the commissioner make? What do the executives make? What do the charitable stakeholders make? The board members? What do all these people, all this grifting going on, people making millions of dollars off the PGA Tour that you've never heard of, that have never never played in a pro tournament in their life, don't do anything, don't add anything. They just have the positions where they make money. I get it. I'm with Phil. I'm also with him on the Saudis. They're bad MFers to get in business with. They do execute gay people. It's bad. There are human rights problems. It's the same thing as China and the NBA being in China. What Phil is saying, let's start this league. Let's get some golfers over here. Let's leverage it against the PGA Tour to make things better for PGA Tour players. Again, PGA Tour players are not in poverty. But I got a couple of numbers for you here. The number one player on the PGA Tour last year was John Rahm. He made $7.7 million. The number one baseball player last year made $48 million. I mean, these numbers are unbelievable. The number 10 golfer in the world made $5.7 million last year. The number 10 baseball player, Zach Greinke, made $33 million and he works every 5 days. This is, I mean, it's crazy. Robert Streb from Kansas City was number 74 last year. He made $1.8 million. The large majority of that was from winning one tournament. He won one tournament. I think he won $1.1 million from that tournament. But he went out and he was a grinder. And you pay your own way. There's no free ride here. There's no team jet to get on. There's no free hotel rooms. There's none of that stuff. You're paying your own way. There's massive expenses in being a pro golfer. Streb's doing fine. He's making a nice living. But if you're the number 74 golfer in the world, shouldn't you make more than that? The average Major League Baseball salary is $4.7 million. There's 750 players. There's about 150 golfers. I mean, seriously, Phil's right. I've never understood it. Yes, if you win a tournament, you get a nice paycheck. But if you don't make the cut, which is what, 50, 60, 70 golfers every week? If you don't make the cut, you just spent 15 grand paying your caddy, flying wherever you're flying, being in the tournament, putting yourself up, doing everything that you do. You just spent, it's a $15,000 loss for the week to go play golf on tour. I get it. I know what Phil's fighting for. This stuff should all be paid for by the tour. All the travel. The caddy salary should be in place. The PGA Tour should pay the caddy salaries. Period. There should be a minimum every week for a caddy. Every caddy should make $2,000 a week. Done. Period. End of statement. Every caddy should get $2,000 a week from the PGA Tour. They should probably unionize and have benefits. All of this is true. And Phil's pointing all this out, and he's saying, look, we haven't been able to get any of this stuff done. None of it. Because we've never had leverage. And yeah, the Saudis are you know, sick MFers that we really don't want to do business with, but this is our chance to fix our tour. This tour is not about the players. And it is not. Look, golf fans only know one thing. They know their favorite player, and they watch on TV, and they're watching a brand, and Phil Mickelson is a brand, and he's got hundreds of millions of dollars. Nobody feels bad for Phil. But one of the things Phil's talking about is Robert Streb, a guy who's going to wind up spending 5, 6, 7 years on the PGA Tour. You're one of the best golfers in the world. You've won two tournaments. You know how few people win professional golf tournaments on this planet? He's won two tournaments on the PGA Tour. This guy should be making a lot more money than most Royals players. Like maybe three or four Royals players should make as much money or more than Robert Streb. The television contracts alone are outrageous. Hundreds of millions of dollars every year. The inventory is the same. It's a four-day tournament. Golf is on all day. There's plenty of advertising inventory. The comparison here is baseball. Golf is always on, or NASCAR. The NASCAR drivers make a lot more money than the golfers do. You can't justify any of this, and Phil is 100% right. The problem is Phil went and apologized. And it makes me sad because Phil is a great conservative. I think he speaks his mind. Mickelson has now apologized to LIV Investments, a group run by Greg Norman and financed mainly by Saudi Arabia. And the crown prince, Salman. But he did not apologize or make any mention of the PGA Tour or its commissioner, Jay Monahan. He has referred to the tour and the commissioner's role as a dictatorship in the interview. Mickelson also said he and three top players had paid attorneys to write the operating agreement for the rival league. So Phil's involved with Greg Norman, three top players, the Saudi princes, says, here's the operating agreement. We're going into a business venture. We're going to make you money. We're going to leverage this against the PGA Tour, and we'll see how they're going to do with Joaquin Niemann winning Riviera. Phil Mickelson did not play in Los Angeles last week. He skipped Pebble Beach. He didn't play Pebble Beach. I can't even remember who won Pebble Beach now. Last week, he skipped Los Angeles, the second biggest media market in America. Phil was not there. He skipped it. He's mad at the tour. Joaquin Niemann won. Does that excite you? Or would you have liked to have seen Phil playing? I get what he's saying. I totally get it. He made some comments about how he's going to have to take a break, blah, 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 find out who the man he is. He had people write this thing for him. It's pathetic. It's sad. It's awful. I did the same stupid thing. These handlers are idiots. They tell you what to say and what to write, and it's foolish. It's all foolish. I've learned my lesson. Phil's going to learn his right here. Say what you believe. Stand by what you say. Period. We need to do this in this country. Mickelson did not say if he's taking a break from golf. People are asking, is he going to play in the Masters? Well, sure, he's going to play in the Masters. And it will be a huge story at the Masters, and this story will keep going forward. It's not going away. But I'm sad that Phil Mickelson has apologized. I'm truly sad because I don't know what he said was wrong. The Saudis are gross. They are human rights violators. They were offering a token of leverage against the PGA Tour. And hey, maybe Phil got it. Maybe the story here is we don't know. Maybe Phil got it. Maybe Jay Monahan and the PGA Tour called him over the last couple of weeks and said, look, if you apologize and you basically back out of this thing and make the Saudis look bad and coddle up to the PGA Tour, we'll let you write the operating agreement. We'll make this change. He may have won a negotiation already. He may have won all kinds of stuff for the players because this has been going on for a while. This is not just new news yesterday. He may say, look, I'll fall on the sword. I'll apologize and I'll pull out of that thing if I get this, 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 and this for everybody on tour. He may have gotten it. We don't know. PGA Tour doesn't answer to anyone. They famously drug test players, and then when players are suspended for something, they say, well, they just need a time away from the game. They've got a health issue. They don't ever tell you. They don't give drug test results. We don't know what happened with Dustin Johnson. You know, all of the things that have happened in the past. We just don't know. The players are critical of the tour, big time. And Phil Mickelson is one of those, and maybe he got something. I hope he did, because apologizing is not a good look as far as I'm concerned. KKHI is brought to you by Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet Buick GMC. I had a wonderful listener yesterday email me and say his truck was repaired there. They did a great job. They fixed it up. They treated him well, and everything is good. It was a pretty big repair, too. I think it was a rather old GM truck that needed some help, and they got it all fixed up, and he is very happy with that. Their service department's outstanding. At the same time, I got an email from a listener who said, hey, who's your contact at Roberts Robinson? I'm getting a new Chevy Silverado. I said, boom, it's Tim Trader. I sent the email address, the phone number, the whole deal. If it doesn't work completely to your satisfaction, let me know. I will get a hold of the owner, Mike Robinson, and we will get you taken care of. I'll be your sales rep on your new GM. I will. If you go to Roberts Robinson, I'll be your conduit. I'll be your personal shopper for you and put you in touch with the folks at Roberts Robinson and make sure that this is the best car buying experience you've ever had and you get exactly what you want. That's my promise to you. You contact me and you can shop, click, and drive at robertsrobinson.com with Chevrolet. Find new roads. Finch Knife Company, online at finchknifeco.com. Spencer and Steve are great local guys. Their design studios in Stillwell. Their knives are now in Teague Tractor in Belton and Shields in Overland Park if you want to see them, or just log on to finchknifeco.com. Keep life from getting dull with Finch Pocket Knives. North Kansas City Dental, Dr. Bill Bush is your new dentist. I know I sound pushy when I say this, but I'm telling you, you're crazy if you don't switch dentists. I mean, unless you really have a relationship with your person, this is your guy. Dr. Bush is your guy. You're going to like it. You're going to like him. You're going to like when he's not working in your mouth, what you talk about, the friendly staff, everything. NKCDental.com, 816-471-2911. They'll help you with sleep disorders, TMJ. He does a lot of great work. Crowns, veneers, TMJ, teeth whitening. They'll even put little jewels in your teeth if you like some of the Chiefs players have. He is the dentist of the Chiefs since 2012. Two offices, one in Kansas, one in Missouri, online at nkcdental.com. Mark Lindquist at 360 Document Solutions. I'm challenging all businesses or business owners or business managers that listen to the podcast to just email Mark and describe your business in a couple of paragraphs. Say, here's what we do. Here's what we have. What do you think? And let him email you back. No sales call, no nothing. Just email Mark. Go to 360documentsolutions.com to learn more and say, here's who and what we are. Do you think this would be a fit? You'd be a fit for us. Any business in Western Missouri or the entire state of Kansas. 360 Document Solutions is online at 360documentsolutions.com. And spring is a great time to play golf at Colbert Hills in Manhattan and tour the Solheim condominiums at Grand Mere. Beautiful upscale condominiums, second homes, investment properties. Back9development.com is the developer. That's my man TJ. He'll give you a personal tour if you call him at 785-236-0161. Or if you're interested in any other project, custom homes, commercial properties, the entire portfolio is online. It's a great developer. Back9development.com. All right, one more sports story before we move on to some news items, and that is Major League Baseball. They had their longest meeting yet on Tuesday in Jupiter, Florida, which is where Tiger lives. Trump's right by there. That's one of the most conservative places in America. Just so we all know, I just vacationed there. I know. It's Let's Go Brandonville. No doubt about that. They met for a long time. And the word out, the reports out of these meetings is that the MLBPA is going backwards. That they're now, what they were asking before wasn't enough. Now they want more. Now that may mean that, as the owners have said, next Monday is the deadline to start the season on time. If we don't have a deal by Monday, we can't start the season on time. I think that's total BS. I agree with the players on that. The players have said, yeah, we don't believe that. We think we can go past February 28th and get the season started on time. Maybe they're feeling like they have more leverage the later it gets. They're now asking for more than they were before. But to me, that's not legitimate bargaining. I've never understood that. Is it illegal? No, it's just immoral. It's wrong. It's just not the way you treat people. If you were asking for four, and now 2 weeks later you change your mind and say, well, we want five, that's a bad look. That's just not legitimate, in my mind, not legitimate negotiation. That's what's going on. At the same time, Major League Baseball owners have said, hey, let's do this. We have a week left. We have 5 days left. Let's bring in a federal mediator and let them pour through this, and let's just let the mediator break it down, and let's go with the mediator. And the players have said, hell no. We're not having some federal mediator in here. We are not going to have a mediator. So it's pretty clear now that this is personal. The players are pissed they got locked out. They think the owners are, it's a money grab, they're offensive, whatever. Players don't really like spring training anyway. Maybe the players don't care if they miss some games, and they're probably right. If they missed like the first 2 weeks of the season, the players would probably still get their full salaries. So they're probably looking at working less and getting paid the same. And hey, if we learned anything during COVID, didn't we learn that's the American way? I'm going to work less and get paid the same. We learned it from federal government workers. We learned it from teachers. We learned it from, we learned it from all kinds of people. Now, not you and me, not the real world. We have a lot of people here, we're getting laid off, out of work, done, gonzo. But for the select few that couldn't be terminated and the government was just going to keep funneling money, you just work less and we'll pay you the same. Well, the baseball players are inspired by the teachers union. We want to be like the teachers. We want to work less and get paid more. Boom. Go get them, baseball players. And I mean that tongue in cheek, because I think this is silly and the things they're arguing over is ridiculous. The deals, the framework for baseball is structurally in place. This is ridiculous. You want to know what one of the things, I'll never forget this, from the last labor agreement, which there was not some sort of a lockout or strike or anything like that. Do you want to know what one of the big talking points, what one of the big points was for the players? I'm not making this up. The Major League Baseball players, this is what they talk about in these meetings. Each player wanted their own row on a team bus, which meant the team would have to go from two buses to three buses everywhere they went, because you got the staff and equipment and all this other stuff. So I remember this because Eric Hosmer was like the player rep at the time. And so we knew this was going on. I'm thinking to myself, okay, you don't want to sit side by side with your teammate. You get your own row of seats on the team bus. That's what every player wants, is their own row. They also all wanted personal chefs, a player's chef in the clubhouse. And they could order their own menu. You can't make this up. I mean, The golfers, again, I'm going back to the golfers and what Phil's wanting. They're not asking for this on the PGA Tour. I mean, the baseball players are unbelievable. They're unbelievable. They have won and won and won. They're the strongest sports union on earth. They have just been fantastic through the years. Truckers have a union. That's the Teamsters, right? 1,000 trucks have started today, Wednesday, in California, and they're headed for Washington, D.C. They claim they're going to go there, and they're going to park, and they're going to demonstrate through March 7th. I'm ready for it. I hope it's a smashing success. I can't believe it will be as organic and effective as the one in Canada. But I'm willing to see. If they really have 1,000 trucks to start, my God, how many will they have by the time they get to D.C.? Truckers along the route are going to join in. What will this look like? So Joe Biden's sitting here dealing with Russia and having all these news conferences, and I think it's more of a bait and switch. Don't pay attention to what's going on in America. But really what's happening is they're concerned about this convoy. They're calling it the People's Convoy. They're mobilizing the National Guard right now to stockpile tow trucks so they can tow them out of there when they get there. Nancy Pelosi said on Tuesday that she personally, as the Speaker of the House, is monitoring the truckers very closely. She's very concerned about an insurrection by the truckers. Here they come to D.C. where our lives are in danger. This could be the start of a civil war. These Democrats are nuts on this thing. Boy, you want to see something that gets their hair on fire? This is it. This is it. I don't think they're going to let them get close to D.C. I think they're going to divert them. I don't know why you would. Why would you let them in? I mean, the simplest thing to do, right, for the National Guard or the federal government or whoever takes charge here, the state of Virginia, the state of Maryland, wherever the trucks come from, the simplest thing to do here is not let them park and then try to arrest them for trespassing or any of that stuff and tow them away. The simplest thing to do is don't let them get there. You can clearly declare some sort of a state of emergency that too many trucks are headed here and we don't have room for them and it's going to be a public safety hazard. There are emergency powers in every state and by the federal government to divert this traffic, I feel sure. Does that not sound right to anybody else but me? I don't know the laws. I'm not a lawyer. But doesn't that sound pretty easy to just divert the traffic and don't let them get near the Capitol? Or even let them in Washington, D.C.? You got to cross the river. You got to cross bridges to get there. Just don't. I mean, it's going to be a boondoggle. It's going to be a mess. I'm not saying that it won't be a major event, because it could be. And what if it winds up being 5,000 trucks? Well, can you even fit 5,000 trucks around the Capitol? I mean, this could be insane. I think they're going to divert them. I don't think they're ever going to let them get there. And I think we're going to see the National Guard deployed on the truckers and the border wide open with 2.1 million people coming in. Stephen Coppetz from the Princeton Policy Advisors says Democrats right now are on, quote, suicide watch, unquote, after Joe Biden has allowed 2.1 million illegals in 2021. There will be another 2.1 million allowed in this year. That's a 30-year, that is unprecedented at our southern border. This has never happened in our country's history. The Democrats deciding not to run for the House of Representatives this year is at a 30-year high. Unprecedented for 30 years. House Democrats not running. They know it's suicide to run, so they're not running. This is a perfect issue for Donald Trump if he runs for president. The wall is his thing. America may be more emboldened to finishing the wall if Trump runs, and we've watched 6 million illegals pour into the country that nobody wants here. Nobody, not even Hispanic Americans, want this. The Freedom Drive should be more than just mandates. These truckers hopefully are on point talking about a lot of other things and have banners about things like open borders and the dangers that truckers face at truck stops driving through New Mexico and Arizona and Texas. You go into your truck stops and you stop and you sleep in your cab, for crying out loud. You park and you sleep overnight. Do you know how many illegal criminals are hanging around those places? They should be at the front line of talking about this issue. Truly. The People's Convoy is underway on this Wednesday. I'm sure that every liberal is very happy that Nancy Pelosi is monitoring this closely. We have to make sure these insurrectionists don't hurt anybody in Congress. I got news for people in Congress. This is people on both sides. We really don't care what happens to you. We don't. We don't want you killed or hurt. That's not, I'm talking about violence. We really don't care about you personally. We don't. We want you to do a job. We don't care about you at all. They think we do. They think they're celebrities and that we really care. You know, Hollywood falls into this trap all the time. You know, these celebrities think we really care about their lives. Well, we don't really care about their lives. We're entertained by their lives. If Nancy Pelosi thinks people care about her because she's famous, we don't. We care about her life when she goes into a salon without a mask on. That's what we care about. We care about stuff like that. We really don't care what, we don't care if these people win or lose. We root for teams. We root for jerseys. We root for Republicans versus Democrats. We don't care who the people are. I'm sorry, we don't. Unless somebody like Trump comes along. And then you're like, that's my guy. There's an identity that people have. Or on the other side, Obama comes along. And they go, that's my guy. There's nobody rooting for Joe Biden. Come on. This whole thing's ridiculous. Totally. We'll see what happens. We'll see how big this thing gets. There's going to be some great aerial shots of this trucker convoy, the People's Convoy, across the country. But the National Guard is already stockpiling and mobilizing tow trucks for D.C. to tow them away. My question is, why let them get there? Why let them get there? It all started in Canada, of course. Canada, Justin Trudeau has come out and says he's standing against authoritarianism. He has put sanctions on Russia. The man who took a single mom who makes minimum wage that gave $40 to the truckers and their cause on GoFundMe and froze her bank accounts. Let me repeat this. The Prime Minister of Canada, the dictator, the authoritarian, froze the bank account of a single mom who works for minimum wage because she donated $40 to the truckers. He has frozen her assets. She cannot bank. She cannot pay her bills. He has locked her out of her own accounts. Says he stands against authoritarianism. Vladimir Putin is authoritarian. Really? You did that to that single mom and you think Putin's a bad guy? This is unbelievable. I mean, I hate to say this because there's nothing good about the man, but Putin looks better every day. He looks to me like if that was my country, at least I know he's on my side. He's fighting for Mother Russia. I mean, I don't know. I don't know about the oppressed in Russia. I can't speak to that. It seems to me to be a relatively free country. Russians come and go. They're not, you know, it's not like the Soviet Union anymore. They're free to come and go. They travel. They go places. You know, they got oligarchs are living well. I don't know enough about Russia. I shouldn't say. But I know plenty of people that are from Russia or came from Russia and are here. I mean, come on. This woman with her bank accounts frozen in Canada, Justin Trudeau says he's against authoritarianism, so he's going to put sanctions on Russia. No, this is just one dictator pissed at another dictator. That's all this is. You're no different, Trudeau. You're no different than Putin. You just don't have any land to reclaim that you believe is rightfully Mother Canada's. And you don't have the military he has. Or you'd probably be trying to get Alaska or Vermont. I don't know what you'd be trying to get. If you could, you probably would. What would make you think if the United States was a weakling and Vermont was sitting there and all that maple syrup, that Trudeau wouldn't say, oh, let's go get that. We want that back. We originally had, people from France and England settle that area, and we believe that's rightfully ours. What? That's kind of what Putin's doing. Oh, but Justin Trudeau's against him. Amazing. Meanwhile, Biden has quotes everywhere coming out. You've seen these, right? Quotes everywhere from the campaign a couple of years ago on how tough he's going to be with Vladimir Putin. He campaigned on, Vladimir Putin does not want me to win because he knows that I will shut him down. Nice work, Joe. Unbelievable. I mean, who could have heard that during the campaign and believed it? Amazingly, as much as he was in the bunker, we still have these statements. He tweeted some stuff about how tough he was going to be on Putin. He's got some quotes out there. You've seen him. They're all over the internet. He looks foolish. Biden looks silly. Biden is completely compromised in Ukraine. It's all about the money. They've made hundreds of millions of dollars in Ukraine, he and his son. It's pathetic. This is the worst of America. This is the worst of us. And he's just going to let them take whatever they take. And I guess as long as they don't fire a shot at a NATO member, and I don't think Putin will, I don't think he's interested in firing one shot at any NATO soldier, country, and I don't think he's interested in any of that. He wants the Soviet Union back. That's all he wants. He wants his old country back, and he's going to fight for that, and I don't think he's interested in taking over Europe. I don't think he wants to conquer the world. I think he wants the Soviet Union back. They want to be communist. They want to join with communist China and say, you know what? After I'm dead, because he's in his 70s, the next person takes over, I can die in peace knowing that my great Soviet Union and the Communist Party of China are going to rule the world. That's for somebody else. That's not for today. But understand that's what he wants. It's completely and utterly what he wants. Marion Body Shop is ready to see your car this week if you slipped and slid around last week in the snow. Online at marionbodyshop.com. Justin is your guy. Give him a call. He's a trip. 913-362-1198, or consider the custom detailing this spring at Marion Body Shop. They love your car more than you do. Bstock.net, the only place to buy electronics in Kansas City, and it's not close. Typically about 30% less than Best Buy or Nebraska Furniture Mart on televisions, computers, laptops, iPads, accessories. It's all online at bstock.net. Even better, if you're looking for something specific, call in advance and say, I'm coming out to your warehouse. 14680 South Flaming Road in Olathe. And Dr. Jeremy Fry at Fry Orthodontics with a dozen locations will give you the perfect smile, or your teenager the perfect smile, with braces or Invisalign. They're both the same price. That's a great deal. Fry Ortho is also the only place that has free retainers for life. At Fry Orthodontics, your smile is just the start. So we'll see how this thing all unfolds with Russia. I loved on Tuesday night, I watched, and I'd sort of been trying to say the same thing, but I had not said it nearly as well or articulated as well as Greg Gutfeld did on his show last night. I flipped over to Gutfeld right after the KUK State game. And he said, look, I don't know anything about Russia and Ukraine. And he said, my wife is from there. I don't know who Greg Gutfeld's wife is. He said she was born in Ukraine, was raised in Moscow. She moved here. He's married to her. And she's never mentioned any of this stuff to me. He's like, I don't know any of this. I don't know that province. I don't know that area. I don't know the geography. I don't know the history. And I thought to myself, well, here's a great immigrant, because that's what you want. She came here and doesn't care about there. She's an American. And I'm sure she's a great American. Gutfeld's not a conservative. He's a libertarian. I'm going to guess she is too, that she grew up in a place where she just doesn't want the government involved in her life at all, which is where I've been told by many of you that I'm libertarian. I think I'm moving that direction. The more I see these governments want to control, the less I want any government, really. But you have to have something. You have to have some structure, right? Somebody's got to build the roads, and we have to have a military. So I can't quite go all the way, like no government. I can't really do that. But man, the less government, the better, as far as I'm concerned. And Gutfeld said, I don't know this. I'm not an expert on this. If anybody at Fox News should be an expert on this, it should be me. I'm married to it, and I still don't know it. And all these people who read one Associated Press story and then go on TV and act like they're experts, they're not. He said, folks, anybody you're watching or listening to about this thing, they are not experts. This thing is so complicated. And in a way, he was saying, it's so small and insignificant, which it's only a tiny little piece of Ukraine right now we're talking about. It's small and insignificant is basically the point of what he was saying. And they're overblowing it because it's a bait and switch. They don't want you to see the truckers. They don't want you to see Let's Go Brandon. They don't want you to see gas prices. They don't want you to see all this other stuff. So let's go Russia, Russia, Russia. Well, we've seen that playbook. They did that with Trump. And boy, were they wrong. The only guy that was right was Mitt Romney, who famously said in a debate against Barack Obama, our biggest geopolitical threat is Russia. They laughed him off the stage. The liberal media attacked him. Romney was right. The left was wrong. The left is always wrong. They always get this wrong. Then they thought, well, okay, Russia's bad guys. Let's make them bad guys against Trump. Trump and Russia are in bed together. Well, let's all hate. One common thread for Americans is we'll all hate Russia. Well, my kids are in their 20s and 30s. They don't know this. They don't remember the Soviet Union. They don't remember the Cold War. They have no reason to hate Russia. Zero. But these old fart Democrats just go back to their 80s playbook and go, oh, let's hate Russia America could circle the wagons on that. There is no polling evidence right now that America has any appetite to hate Russia right now. None. Zero. Or be involved in this thing. So Biden's trying to play it both ways. He's trying to stay out of it, which he knows is popular with Americans. And he's trying to convince people we have an enemy and pay attention because these people are evil and we can all be together in hating the Russians. It's pretty good by Gutfeld. Not stealing his stuff. I'm just saying he said it better than me. There are no real experts on this thing. And we don't know what Putin's going to do. We better keep an eye on it because it could lead to something pretty ugly. Hey, thanks for listening to Kevin Kietzman Has Issues, and thank you so much for sharing with your friends and family as well. It means a great deal to me. I get emails every week of people saying, I just found your podcast. I get, we're going about 100 a week. I get 100 new followers a week, which is people who've just found it and start listening. That's real progress, and that's because of you. You're doing that. You're telling people about it. You're asking them to hit that like or follow button. That's free. They get the notifications. It helps spread the word on these things. We're going to be doing some great local race stuff in April with school boards. It's going to be very important. We hope people around the area will get a chance to hear this. So I really appreciate all your help and support. And the easy way is just wherever you go, remember, anybody you run into, tell them, Kevin Kietzman has issues.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Kietzman Has Issues, presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC. To get exclusive patrons-only podcasts, receive a weekly newsletter, and attend in-person patrons-only parties, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron today. This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.